Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today is March 1st, 2024. 9 a.m. With me today is Chairman Olson, Senator Merrick, Senator Keel, Senator Wilson. Senator Bishop will be joining us. He's at another state meeting right now. And Senator Hoffman is excused today. We have one agenda item this morning. We're going to receive an update from the Alaska Broadband Office. And we've got an hour and a half this morning. It'll probably take us about an hour to go through the slides, roughly, depending on how things go. So with that, I'd like to ask the director of the Alaska Broadband Office, Thomas Lochner, to come forward, please. And he can introduce himself for the record, who he represents, and we'll go through his presentation, and then ask him just to pause briefly at the end of every slide in case there's a question, and I'll signal to you if there's a question. If not, we'll just go on to the next next slide. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Thomas Lochner. I am the director of the Alaska Broadband Office under the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And I'm here to give an update on the activities of the Alaska Broadband Office. Our mission keys off the federal mission of Internet for All, and it's to facilitate the full benefits of broadband for all Alaskans with improved quality of service and lower costs. Oops, I'm sorry. Next slide. The office is relatively compact. I've got myself, my tribal liaison, the office's deputy director, and our administrative specialist to give a little bit of briefing on each of those positions. I come to the position from 23 years of telecom experience. I started at ATU. Before it became Alaska Communication Systems, worked there for 19 years, and then went to Arctic Slope Telephone. Had a wonderful series of opportunities to work in customer service, engineering, the network planning, strategic development. So I've run the gamut of the entire telecommunications. The only part I wasn't a part of was marketing. But I've had experience in a lot of the different areas, which uniquely prepped me for this position to be able to look at the needs of Alaskans in the urban, rural, and ultra-rural locations to be able to develop a broadband plan. The deputy director, Lisa Von Bargen, comes to us from years of experience as, I believe, the city manager in Valdez and in Wrangell. She is an expert in the federal processes and helps the office work through interfacing with the federal government, as well as she is in charge of the workforce development plan, and that is in draft, and we are reviewing that and prepping that for the next stage to get it into the broadband plan. Melissa Kukesh, who is in the gallery with us, most of you know, comes with a world of experience both in the legislature and in tribal government, and helps the broadband office negotiate and interface in tribal matters to make sure that, as the mission statement says, all Alaskans are served. And then new to the team is Kaylin Himes, who is our administrative specialist. She comes to us from the Department of Health and Human Services. So, because we are a compact office, we can't do it all, and we can't have the expertise in all areas. So we have interfaced with different state agencies to tap into their expertise. Ashley Adoko from the Office of Project Management and Permitting has helped us tremendously work through some of the navigation and streamlining of the permitting process. we have found, and when I was in private industry, Aztec had a fiber line between Utqiagvik and Atkasuk, and it was 4.5 years worth of permitting for 7 months worth of work. So we know that permitting tends to be the long pole in the tent, and so we wanted to make sure that wherever possible we can streamline. And Ashley is also interfacing with Jill Springer from the federal permitting, as well as the NEPA representative in Washington, so that as these projects come forward, we have the permitting dialed and as efficient as possible. The Department of Transportation, we have been working with on permitting and on the best way to look at if there is not lands available for landing stations, what can be done on state lands as a possibility. Those are all in preliminary conversations, and we don't have any specifics on that yet. There were three major accomplishments over the past year. One was the Digital Equity Plan, which is through a partnership and several sub-partnerships. The state of Alaska developed to look at the 8 covered populations, and I have a slide on that later, of the Digital Equity Plan to see what the shortfalls are with digital equity in Alaska. We developed a plan. It has 14 key performance indicators that will be measured, one for each of the 8 populations and 5 general ones. And then the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program under the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act is the $42.45 billion tranche of funding that will actually build the infrastructure, and the National Telecommunications and Information Administration broke that down into 2 different segments. The feds call them Volume 1, Volume 2. You can see them here as the challenge process is what they call Volume 1, and the grant program is what they call Volume 2. The challenge process attends to the actual individual locations and making sure that all Alaskans have a voice to say, yes, I am served, or no, I am not served. And so the state of Alaska, through a partnership with Division of Community and Regional Affairs, has developed a portal that allows for folks to go in and make those challenges. Interesting side note, the federal government only had local governments, tribal governments, ISPs, and nonprofits available to do challenges. But the broadband office looked out over the state of Alaska and said that doesn't seem fair if an individual wants to make a challenge. So we've actually created an other button on our portal so that individuals can put in challenges. Those will then be vetted through the broadband office for completeness and then sent to through a partnership with the Alaska Municipal League as a nonprofit to them in order to put them in. So wanted to make sure we had full coverage of all Alaskans being able to be heard. And then the grant program we developed in partnership with the grant administration section of the Division of Community and Regional Affairs, and we have submitted that to the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, or NTIA. And that is currently with the NTIA, and we're awaiting their review for us to then negotiate if they have any challenges or cure processes to that.
I have a question. Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. Thanks for being here. How do Alaskans that don't have internet access this portal and submit a challenge?
They would not be able to, through the chair, they would not be able to submit it in the portal. Or they would have to go to, if they don't have internet access themselves, they would either have to access it through a public location, or they would have to, It's an interesting question. And if someone does not have internet access to their house, most likely their house would be labeled with a red dot and say unserved. And in that case, there's nothing to challenge.
Thank you very much.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you look at some of the, and I thank you for making it so that people can go ahead and have a voice out there. Not so much a challenge, but I was wondering, have you had very many challenges from the public toward your office or toward what's the development of the infrastructure?
Thank you. Through the chair, we put all three of these documents out for public comment. Mm-hmm. In the challenge process, we received three public comments. Sure. On the digital equity plan, we received 112 comments. And on the grant program itself, we received 30 comments.
I see. So, mm-hmm. One more question, Mr. Chairman. I should have asked this before, but as you were talking about your own personal resume and those kind of things, what kind of where have you gone to school and what kind of degree have you had and that allowed you to get to such a broad and diverse ability to go ahead and take this challenge on?
Excellent. Actually, your chair. So to the chair. It's an amusing anecdote. Sure. When I took the SATs, it turns out I was really good at math but terrible at English. Mm-hmm. So I went and got an English major to make that a stronger component of my kit. I, during college, worked for Wilson Condon at Condon Partner in Schrock, working on the Amarada Hess case for oil royalties. And through that training under Will Condon, we developed a spreadsheet pre-Excel. It was initially in Lotus 1-2-3 and then in a program called Smart Suite, that when we printed it out and brought it down and presented it to the governor, it was Cooper at the time, it was 35 feet long and 5 feet tall. Sure. And we called it the 35 feet spreadsheet. And Wilson would always walk up and go, "Thomas, that number can't be wrong, right?" And it would be in the middle of the sheet, and he would absolutely be right, and it drove me crazy. So I made sure that every time I did that, because it's a large investment to print out and put up, that everything was vetted and looked at and then re-looked at again. So I don't have formal training in telecom other than my years of experience. But the years at the law firm, and I'm not an attorney, the years at the law firm trained me to think about things in a slightly different way and approach things slightly differently.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on board, Mr. Chairman. If I can just comment, coming on board with all that experience upon the North Slope where things are tough. Thank you. No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead and continue.
As I mentioned, the tranche for the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program, or BEAD, was $42.45 billion. Of that, Alaska got $1,017,139,672.42. It seemed like a strange number to put 42 cents at the end of that, but we'll take anything we can get. Initially, folks were saying we were going to get $400 to $500 million, but through the congressional delegation and a lot of work by a lot of folks, we were able to educate and help folks understand that Alaska is different. One of the anecdotes that we received back from the congressional delegation is somebody in Washington said, "What do you mean the Yukon freezes? It doesn't work like Mississippi where you can send barges up and down it all year round." And so we wrote a letter to them that shared with them that over 70% of the ultra-rural communities in Alaska are only accessible by seasonal barge twice a year and small plane. One of the FCC's commissioners had a wonderful experience flying into Bethel. And the anecdote is that the jet to take him back to Anchorage overflew Bethel. And his staff person said, "Well, we'll just go to the rent-a-car place and rent a car." And so ultimately, a small plane had to go out and get them. So the folks in Washington are open to learning about Alaska. And then there's the education to let them know that Alaska is different.
They could have just called Uber.
That's true. The $1 billion, or just over $1 billion, that Alaska got will be distributed among these three priorities. So it's the unserved, cannot reach 25 megabits download speed and 3 megabits upload speed. Download is generally watching movies, pulling content from the internet. Upload is when I'm putting pictures of my family and dog and cars up to the internet. That's the asymmetry is that most folks consume more than they put up to the internet. Underserved is can reach the 25 over 3 mark, but can't reach 100 over 20. And then over at and over 100 over 20 is considered served. And then there's concern about community anchor institutions not being having a 1 gigabit per second symmetrical or 1 gig over 1 gig connection. One note here, the broadband office did an assessment of network ideas with a capital estimate of what it would cost. That cost is $1.8 billion, and it's fractional that we only got a billion. Fortunately, there are other programs that communities and companies are applying for. Those are the Tribal Broadband Connectivity Round 1, which has been awarded, Tribal Broadband Connectivity Round 2, which will be which closes on March 22nd, and then the United States Department of Agriculture, or USDA, just put out what they call Reconnect Round 5 for folks to bid on. So we're optimistic that even though there's a delta between what the network ideas say would be the capital investment necessary and the BEAD funding that the Broadband Office and the state of Alaska has been allocated, that the delta will be mostly be made up by those other programs.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lochner, I missed, you did an assessment and doing what will cost $1.8 billion?
Building fiber to every single location, every single community within, I'm sorry, through the chair, building fiber to every single location community in Alaska.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Go ahead and continue.
The calendar of events. So I'm going to take these a little bit out of order of how you saw them on the initial slide. This is the challenge process. It's a 120-day process where we will post once our challenge process is approved by the NTIA. We will post all of the broadband serviceable locations for 30 days for folks to review. Then the challenge process itself starts, where those four entities, as well as individuals, can put in their challenges to their locations. The providers then have 30 days to respond to those. And then if there is a delta between what the challenge is and what the provider says is available at any location, the broadband office has 30 days to adjudicate those and make a decision. Concurrent with the running of the challenge process, as I said, earlier, the grant program is being reviewed by the NTIA, and so the lower bar there is shows that we anticipate that the grant program, which once approved starts the 365-day shot clock, will be approved just after our challenge process has been run. Once the challenge process has run, like I said, we have 365 days to then run the grant program. We anticipate a 120-day grant window, and then folks will submit their grants at the end of that 120 days. We'll take 90 days, at which point we will hire a professional engineer to help us review the proposals. Each of the three primary members of the Alaska Broadband Office will have an adjudication sheet for each grant. They will all be independent, and then we will aggregate and make selections based on the winning numbers. On the digital equity side, a total of $2.75 billion was allocated for this. And you can see that the three tranches down below. The $60 million for planning, Alaska received $567,800 of that to develop the plan that I referenced in the earlier slide. The capacity grants and the competitive grants, the delta there is the capacity grants will come through the Alaska Broadband Office to then be distributed, and the competitive grants, folks will just go straight to the NTIA to put in for grants. And so we anticipate that in early April, the notice of funding opportunity will come out for the capacity grants, and we'll also know what Alaska's allocation is for those capacity grants. Per the law, it follows the same ratio as the planning grants. So we've done an estimate. The eight covered populations that we will primarily be focused on in the digital equity plan are that what you see before you. But our anticipation is that all boats will rise with the tide, so that it won't just be these eight covered populations, but all populations will have access to better digital equity. For timing, the Broadband Office expects that the Notice of Funding Opportunity will come out in early April. We will have 60 days to respond to that. And then the competitive grants, post that 60 days, then we will run those grants within the state of Alaska. And the competitive grants are anticipated to come out on September 29th. So we will have some concurrency, and we're working with the NTIA to figure out how folks will either apply for both or apply for one, or if there's prevent any conflicts in double funding. The fabric map, when I came before you last year, I had a picture of Alaska that showed pins on the map. The reason we had the pins on the map is because the initial fabric map missed 70 communities within Alaska altogether. So the Broadband Office had to do a very labor-intensive look at every community to see what the services were in every community. Excuse me. The FCC has since corrected that for version 2 and continues on an every 6-month cadence to improve the map based on input from industry and the state and private citizens. The NTIA then took that map and did an assessment of, based on the reporting from the providers, an assessment of unserved, underserved, and served locations, and then gave that to the state of Alaska, which we have then in draft form put on the map. They also came up with high cost and non-high cost items, which I'll show in a later slide. And then the state of Alaska Broadband Office, in order to make sure that there's no double funding, had to go through a deconfliction process, and we are still in the process of doing that. We have printed out maps for each of you, for each of your districts. And you can see in those maps, it's color-coded stoplight, red unserved, yellow underserved, green served, as well as light blue is the projects where we have been able to deconflict, and then the white dots will either turn light blue or they'll turn red, depending on the final deconfliction in some communities. As I mentioned, the NTIA determined the locations that are high cost and non-high cost. The pink with red outline areas are the high cost areas, and the impact of that is that they're in the notice of funding opportunity, there is a 25% match required for all projects. And what they've said in these high cost areas, that match is automatically waived. And in the non-high cost areas, that match is required, but a waiver can be requested. So.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lochner, where do these where do these matches normally come from? Are they federal funds or municipal funds or local funding?
Through the chair, the match would be by the bidder.
Oh, by the bidder. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I know this is a very small scale map, so it's hard to read, but it looks like Angoon would be a low cost and Sitka would be a high cost, and that seems backwards. And then the tip of what appears to be Baranoff Island is Port Alexander, and that's pretty much secluded community, and that looks like it's low cost. So can you get back to the committee with more detail of these communities? So
yes. And to the chair, the high cost denominator automatically waives. In the non-high cost areas, the broadband office is absolutely open to looking at those and saying, wait, this is truly a high cost area that the NTIA did not categorize correctly. So the broadband office will be, in those cases, asking for a waiver for relief from that 25% match.
And maybe you can get back to us with a list of the communities, and then we could take a look at the communities that we represent, and
yes,
other colleagues that aren't at the table here can review, and we can kind of double check.
Excellent. Yes, we will take that as an action.
Okay.
And my final slide shows the different technologies that we see on the table. The notice of funding opportunity calls out for fiber specifically, as a preference and a priority. But the NTIA recognizes that in some cases, the putting of fiber will exceed an extremely high cost threshold level. And in those cases, it shifts to first a reliable, what's considered by the federal government as a reliable broadband, which is microwave and licensed microwave. And then if there's no bidders there, you can shift to actually geosynchronous satellite is also considered reliable. And in the final case, if there's no bidders, it can shift to what's considered not reliable, and Starlink falls into that category as well as unlicensed microwave.
And why would Starlink be less reliable?
To the chair, the federal government, the FCC, has made that denomination, and I'm not sure why.
Okay. Any questions on, we got Senator Keel, then Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Term on the slide, I don't understand. Oversubscription, and there's a ratio. What does that mean?
Through the chair, that's an excellent question. Generally, everybody's not on all at the same time. So in order to optimize the capacity and sometimes expensive capacity, if the Thomas Lochner's not using the capacity and all the bits, it's open to you. So at the same moment, 7 or 8 people can be on the same capacity, and the machinery picks which one is actually active and using. And then when I'm reading a document that I've pulled up, I'm no longer sending bits. So your bits go through. And then when you've pulled up a document and you're reading it, my bits will go through. What we're finding is that where an oversubscription rate of 100 to 1 was acceptable 10 years ago, that number has steadily come down as people stream more and more content is consumed. That being said, a high-definition movie runs right around 4 megabits per second, excuse me. So if you have a 25 meg link, it's pulling and pushing data fairly quickly, and where it's pulled in data and buffered, that capacity then can be used for other folks. So the oversubscription is that 8 to 15 folks can use that same capacity comfortably, not see any buffering.
Just to follow up,
and then Senator Bishop.
So just help me with these numbers on the bottom of the chart. A high ratio is an indicator of high efficiency option or an option that is problematic?
It's an option that's problematic. Because the capacity, I'm sorry, through the chair, the capacity is so high on fiber, you can do a one-to-one oversubscription or a one-to-five oversubscription comfortably with the capacity you have. When you have constricted capacity and you have a lot of customers, that's where you get the problem where you have to have all of those customers on a constricted capacity.
Thank you.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Lochner, could you have, I was gone, obviously, and I just got here. Have you spoken about workforce demands and updated the committee on the broadband training document in your office?
Through the chair, I did mention that our deputy director is working on that document as we speak, and it is in draft form, and we are working through making sure that we tick and tie all the numbers that our consultant has provided for us, as well as is something that is easily consumable by all Alaskans.
Brad?
And workforce numbers to implement this? You got a ballpark?
Through the chair, thank you. Yes, for the 6 years of the BEAD program, across all disciplines, we anticipate there'll need to be 17,000 new entrants to the labor pool over the 6 years in order to build all of the projects that will be coming out.
Thank you. And where do you intend to get these 17,000 people?
Florida.
Okay. As long as they don't look for Uber, they'll be okay.
To the chair, I don't mean to sound glib with that answer. It's just been my experience with Arctic Slope Telephone. A lot of the technicians, for whatever reason, were hired out of Florida. But to Senator Bishop's comment about workforce, we are looking to make sure that there is the opportunity for Alaskans to have these jobs by making sure that we work with Illisavik College, we work with the trade school in Kotzebue and AVEC to get these trainings and even at the King Career Centers or King Tech and locations and education institutions like that so that we can get broadband training as curricula for folks to then move into these jobs.
Right, because it seems like an opportunity here to try to take some of the young Alaskans and get them into a technical trade. And they're probably more likely to stick around than the folks from Florida or somewhere else.
That is true, yes.
Senator Bishop.
Mr. Chairman, at one point in my life, I was at the other end of the table speaking to you about workforce development for a gas pipeline. And we worked on a delivery method for that workforce. And that template is in place, and that's why I asked you about the training plan, the draft plan, because I'm wanting to see it. Because the template is there. The delivery is there on a statewide action item to deliver that training, and it can be stood up really quick. So I just want to put that on the record.
Okay. Any other questions on this slide? Okay. Last slide of the day.
That was my last substantive slide, Chairman.
Any final questions for the presenter from the committee? Any final comments that the presenter would like to make?
Actually, Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson. I have one question. the budget you have is just over $1 billion. What, do you have a timeline on when that has to be spent in order to provide the service to the people throughout, especially rural Alaska, and when do you expect that to be done?
Thank you. Through the chair, there is a timeline specified in the Notice of Funding Opportunity that once the grants are awarded, there's a four-year timeline to build with a potential for a fifth-year extension if it's necessary.
And Mr. Chairman, if I can continue.
Yes.
If that is indeed the case and the 4 or 5 year portion has not commenced yet, when do you expect it to be, I mean, do you expect it all to be completed by then?
Through the chair, we expect that the projects will come in. There's going to be simpler projects and more complicated projects, but we expect an average of about 5 years, 4 or 5 years to get the fiber and or reliable telecommunications in place.
Last question, Mr. Chairman. As you look at that and it's going to go over 5 years, what kind of paperwork or obstacles do you see for those contractors that are out there that will take longer than 5 years to go in and complete the project? Do you have a plan for that, or is that still to be determined?
Through the chair, we have asked the NTIA about that. Mm-hmm. We, you know, plan for the worst, hope for the best.
Sure.
And the NTIA said if there's already a commitment and we're seeing the benchmarks hit, mm-hmm. and we're seeing that the programs are well in place and are moving along, that there will be extensions in order to complete those projects if it takes more time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No further questions.
Any other questions? Any final comments? Okay, thank you for coming in and updating the committee. We look forward to you getting back to us on the list of all the communities, and we'll try to help you look for any errors or oversights, because it's kind of a window of opportunity. We don't want to miss anything. So that'll conclude this morning's meeting. There will be no meeting Monday. So again, there's no meeting Monday. Our next hearing is going to be Tuesday, March 5th at 9 a.m. The committee is going to hear from several different school districts. And we're going to have large ones, small ones, medium-sized one. We're going to have some that have advancing enrollment and some that have declining enrollment over the last couple of decades. We're going to take a look at the not only the enrollment trends, we'll look at their budget history. We're going to have discussions on their current finances and their fund balances. And then we're going to have a conversation of the potential impact or fluency of their operating budget, dealing with the base student allocation, depending on if we have a status quo base student allocation, or if it's increased to 680 or some other numbers. So we're going to have some of their business managers here, so they'll be able to answer the financial questions. And the lead district will be Anchorage. So we're going to try to have the Anchorage business manager do some of the definitional issues and some of the basics, so when we go to the other school districts, we don't have to repeat that stuff. And we can hopefully then get a feel for what is the financial status, not only of their current cash positions, but what is their operating environment, because they're all going to be different. And we expect to see different answers from all of them as far as their needs. And it should be a good cross-section for the committee members then to dive in deeper if they so choose, or look at their own district or other districts. So it should be an informative meeting. Again, that'll be 9 a.m. Tuesday morning. We are adjourned.
Mr. Chairman, I have one further question.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Lochner, as you look back on some of the issues that are happening, especially in the recent past, where Senate Bill 140 has been one of the vehicles that has had a fair amount of tumult and treacherous pathway to go ahead and travel, the passage or not passage of SB 140, what does that do to your broadband office, since it is the broadband grant bill? Does that have any effect on it, on what you're doing?
Thank you. Through the chair, it does not have an impact. The broadband office primarily deals with capital investments,
okay.
and building out infrastructure, and the The education bill deals with operating or ongoing costs. Sure.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the.
So we're adjourned at 9:39. We are adjourned.